You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is our NBA analyst, Nick Wright.
You're so charged up. I think your energy made my earpiece
went
out.
Man, yeah, I'm electric this morning, man.
Nick's
I'm on no sleep.
I'm
firing off tweets, watching inside the NBA. Got a lot of takes. I don't know if
you have your patch on.
What? Two today. Double nicotine patch day. Got a lot to talk about.
This is Nick on no sleep
at
all.
Yeah.
But he's in a good mood. You'll find out why over the course of the next 3 hours. The Boston Celtics are in deep trouble after losing to the Bucks. That's one reason why. The Warriors are reportedly already worried about free agency. It's two reasons why. But there's only one place to start, and that is with that game. Rockets
and
Warriors. Houston trying to even the series at two games apiece. Pick this up end of the third. James Harden nailing the step-back three. He had 38 in this one. Less than 30 seconds left. Warriors down five. Steph misses from long, gets it back, and drills it. Warriors down two. Less than 10 seconds left. Here we go. Warriors down three. Now Kevin Durant can hit the shot. Steph gets a chance. Steph can hit the shots. No more chances, no more shots. Rockets win at 112-108. Hey, this series is heading back to Oracle now. Here's James Harden after the win.
We know, you know, what's at stake. We know who we're playing against. We're not going to let up. Like, we're going to keep coming at you until the end of the game.
Obviously, we would love to be, up 3-0 or have 3-1 or have the series, over, but there's no panic. I know we say that a lot, but it's really just we're together and we understand what the task at hand is. And, very similar to last series where whatever the expectations were going in, you kind of just roll with the punches and just get the job done any way that you can. So Wednesday is going to be fun. Got a great opportunity to get control of the series, do it at home, and then take it from there.
All right, Nick, I'll start with you. How'd the Rockets do it? How did they even up this series?
Defensively, they did what they've been doing the whole series long, which is run everyone off the three-point line, make the greatest three-point shooting team over an extended stretch in NBA history, the most potent three-point shooting team, into a two-point shooting and layup team, dare Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green to beat him. And for the first time in this series, Andre Iguodala was not able to come through on those open shots. The only three he made was the one at the end of the quarters, the time winding down. And then trust that James Harden could either out-duel or at least play Kevin Durant to a standstill. And then that they have the better supporting cast. And with the way Steph played well last night, but Klay did not, Iggy had a rough game. The Rockets defensively were, in my mind, excellent once again. PJ Tucker continues to get every 50-50 ball within three arms reach of him. And the Rockets are making the Warriors play an uncomfortable style of basketball. And that, combined with the fact, you just know the Rockets are going to hit 15 or so threes. Last night, they hit 17. They shot 50 threes. It's the third time in NBA history that's ever been done in a playoff game, all three times by the Daryl Morey, James Harden, Houston Rockets. And that's what allowed them to build a 17-point lead. Now, they almost gave it away at the end. And even at the very end, I don't know what they were talking about in the timeout, because Kevin Durant comes off wide open with the exact shot he wants. Then they get fortunate enough to get the same one for Steph. But the Rockets did what they absolutely had to do, which is win both games at home. And now they're in a similar position to last year, where with one of the greatest teams ever, it's down to a best of three. And they'll take their chances from there.
Yeah, one thing they decided to do was go small. They went with a small lineup, Austin Rivers. He contributed 10 points, made some big plays for them, defensive stops for them. That's one of the reasons why they get the win. This was their 12th win at home, so they've been playing well leading back to the regular season.
12th win in a row.
12 wins in a row at home. That's one of the reasons they get it done. They're very, very comfortable. It seemed as if they got their shooting stroke back early, but the combination of attacking the rim, that's been my theme. When they don't play well, they settle for too many jump shots. Nick said, well, proportion to the shots, they still shot over 50 threes, but they lived at the three-point line and in the restricted area in the two games at home where they're able to get the series back. They're averaging 28 attempts in that restricted area after averaging 26 during the regular season. So it's very few times teams can play the same style for which they played during the regular season. Houston has gotten back to that at home, and their defense has been good enough, and that's what saved them late in the fourth quarter.
And this is, they were able to win these two games in Houston against Golden State, where Golden State had 8 turnovers and 11 turnovers. And that's key.
That's a great sign.
Because typically the one bugaboo the Warriors have had that during this unprecedented run is they will kick the ball around the court. They will turn the ball over. And for you to beat them twice where they have a combined 19 turnovers in two games.
Especially when they're fully engaged in playoff mindset. Yep. That is a great point. When you think about how you're going to beat the Warriors, Nick always points out, man, they get careless with the basketball. They will give you some 15, 18 turnover games.
And they haven't, and the Rockets, they didn't win a game back in Houston because of that. The Warriors weren't lackadaisical from the opening tip. There wasn't a moment in the game where they lost focus. The Rockets were better. The Warriors were very fortunate to be in position to force overtime yesterday. The Rockets had played better than them for 43 minutes, and then the final 5 minutes they were just trying to hold on. But the Warriors got to look at it and say, man, aside from Klay shooting better, what really, with our current lineup, can we do better than we did yesterday? And how can we do that in Oracle to not come back to Houston for Game 6 down 3-2?
But was it enough? And I want to talk about James Harden in a second. But was it enough confidence? Did they have enough momentum now to go steal one at Oracle, this Houston team?
Well, this is the thing. If you've been following the NBA the last couple years, you know in the last 2 years, no one has a winning record against the Warriors except the Rockets. Now for them coming back home, the Warriors aren't surprised that they won these two games. So it's not a matter of what they gained over the last two games, the last 3 days, 4 days. No, for the last couple years, this organization, they've been the only team to be able to say it. We're gunning for the Warriors. We're built to beat the Warriors. They're the only team that has a winning record against them. And they had them on the ropes. They're the only one to be able to win 3 games in a series. So I'm not shocked by this. The Clippers won 2 games,
yeah.
All right? And that, besides the Rockets and what they did to them last year, no one has pressed the Warriors, and no one has pressed them like the Rockets.
Have we put to bed this narrative that James Harden just can't deliver in the postseason after what we've seen him do this series?
Well, I think it was always always an unfair narrative, but no, we
until
are.
Until he has his next bad game.
Correct.
Excuse me.
No, please.
Because this is the way things are. If people question your game, and I keep going back to it, if they find some way not to like you, you know, as much as some of their other players, they find ways to punch holes in your game. For Harden, what can you say during the regular season now? He has squashed that.
Right.
This year, man, we had the videos. Jenna, you were so impressed. He's working out after hitting 40 and 50 spots the night after the game, which that wasn't part of Harden. But there's just something about Harden. When he has his next bad game, no one's going to give him the Klay Thompson treatment where they're not going to mention it. So unfortunate for Harden. He's truly one of the great players that we do have, but he has not put that to bed yet.
Until they beat the Warriors, until they win a title. Now, some of the Harden narrative about struggling in the playoffs, in my mind, is totally fair, and some of it is ahistorical. What's totally fair is, similar to what I said about Steph yesterday, there are elements of Harden's game for different reasons. For Steph, I think it's size and strength related. For Harden, it's the relying on the officials related, that does not directly translate to the postseason. And similar to Steph, Harden's bad playoff games are really bad. They are 4 of 21. There's the game against Utah where he starts 0 for 15. So those stick out in your mind. But we should not act like Harden has not had a long list of spectacular playoff moments. He's 12th on the all-time list on 40-point playoff games. 12th. He's got 8 of them. Against the Warriors, since the Warriors have been champions, he has scored 38-plus on them, what he got last night, 5 separate times. So against a team that up until this year was a great defensive team, he had dropped 38-plus on them 5 times. So he has had some really high-level playoff moments, but he's never been to the NBA Finals as a Rocket. Mm-hmm. He went there, obviously, as a sixth man with Oklahoma City. And his bad playoff games, Game 6 against the Spurs a couple years ago when they didn't even have Kawhi and they beat him. He had an 11-turnover elimination game. His bad playoff games stick out to you. So the narrative is partially based in truth and partially based in the dislike of the player, like you're saying.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, is Kyrie to blame for the Celtics going down 3-1? Short answer, Nick? Probably. That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on Sirius XM. We're in it. We'll be right back. Yes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to First Things First. Today is Foster Care Awareness Day, and Fox Sports Supports has partnered with the Ticket to Dream Foundation to help foster kids just be kids. This means creating opportunities for children that allow them to discover their strengths and passion through sports, while also strengthening their future through education. To learn more about how you can help a foster child in your community, visit tickettodream.org. Really good stuff, really important stuff.
If I may, for a moment, one of the best people I've ever met in my life, a woman named Melissa Stanridge, who lives in the Kansas City area. She has fostered, gosh, I want to say upwards of 10 kids since I've known her, adopted many of them as her own children. And to see these kids and the way it changed their lives and now know them as, you know, young men and women, such a wonderful cause, such a wonderful organization.
Yeah, didn't know you were going to tell that story. A good friend of mine, the late, great Mr. Thomas, Dave Thomas, the founder of Wendy's, he was a foster child. And, man, he promoted it, let all kinds of kids know that there is hope. You can live out your dreams, even though being a foster child. So that my first experience with it was him showing me and really promoting it worldwide. So the late, great
Dave Thomas.
Dave Thomas.
Awesome.
Good stuff. All right, let's get back to the show now. Bucks and Celtics. We'll talk about them in just a second. But first, couple highlights from last night. Warriors Rockets, James Harden hits the step back three right in front of Clay. Where was Clay last night?
Well, I mean, nowhere on the offensive end. I do like that Clay's trying to, you say where it was, hide. Listen, you knocked Harden to the ground. Putting your hands behind your back isn't going to prevent the foul being called.
Oh, it's game number one. That's not a foul.
You're right.
What are you talking about? He's like, oh.
You're right about that. Harden got two of those last night.
No, not game number one.
And none of them were Harden jabroni stuff. It was legitimate fouls. The Warriors screwed up.
Much more from this one.
Jabroni, it's a wrestling term.
Oh. Looks like he's got nowhere to go till he finds a cutting Austin Rivers.
Austin Rivers, see, you keyed on it to start the show, man. Big minutes for them. The Rockets go super small. Austin Rivers, one of those pickups by Daryl.
Yeah, we need to get him a playoff, like playoff Rondo.
Oh, yeah, playoff Rivers.
Yes, absolutely. Last couple years has been big in the playoffs.
Bucks and Celtics, Eric Bledsoe coming out of nowhere blocking Jason Tatum's layup.
And then he steps over him a bit. He hesitates for about another quarter second. That might be a technical foul. Bledsoe was a bulldog last night.
He really was.
They had no answer for him getting to the rim.
Huge signing with them. They signed him to an extension during the regular season. We talk about Giannis. We talk about other things. We don't give Bledsoe enough credit. He had a spectacular season. It's been really good in the offseason.
And they needed him last night because Middleton was bad.
Yes.
All right, let's stay with the game.
Oh, no.
The Bucks handled the Celtics again last night, led by the one superstar who actually played like a superstar, Giannis. 39 points from 39 points from Giannis and Milwaukee. Milwaukee's 113-101 win. The other superstar, Kyrie Irving, 23 points, but on 22 shots. Another subpar night from him, his third this series now. So the Bucks win. They now take a commanding 3-1 series lead as we move back to Milwaukee. Here is Giannis Antetokounmpo after the game.
Very good.
Great players, you know, they don't, when they find an opportunity like this, they don't, you know, waste it. You know, you got to take advantage of it. You got to, like, close the game out. And that's what my mindset, both games, but especially this game. You know, and at the end of the day, you know, when I step on the court, I got to do whatever it takes for my team to win.
Have you ever had a shooting stretch like this? I think it's now at this point 19 for 62.
Yeah, who cares? Who cares? I'm a basketball player. You know, prepare the right way. Like I said, it's a little different when, you know, your rhythm is challenged every play down. You know, you're being picked up full court. You know, they're doing things to test you. And, you know, the expectations on me are going to be sky high. For me, the 22 shots, you know, I should have shot 30. You know, it really, I'm not great of a shooter. So I think that just the consistency of just going at it, staying aggressive is always going to put us in a great position.
We'll get to a lot of what Kyrie had to say in a second. You know, you see Giannis pop up. You're watching him learn how to be a basketball player as his Bucks team goes further and further into the playoffs. You like what he has to say. You feel like he's sort of learning it as you're watching him. But 3-1 in this series, Nick, is this all but over?
Oh, yes. The series is over. Kyrie's tenure in Boston is over. That was Kyrie's last home game as a Boston Celtic. I'd be shocked otherwise. The only way it's not is if they go to Milwaukee and steal game five, but then it's just over in six. This entire two-year experiment with Kyrie Irving is holding on to our bullets till we can fire our gun with all these trade assets to get a superstar, it's ending in disaster. And while I empathize with Kyrie Irving, he has made this worse on himself by all through the regular season. When Marcus Morris was trying to wave red flags to everyone, this is a team in crisis, Kyrie said repeatedly, wait till the playoffs. These kids don't know it, but I got us in the playoffs. I've got it handled. I know what this is about. This is when it's fun. This is what you brought me here for. So when you then have the worst three-game stretch arguably in your career, as three games where you go from up 1-0 to down 3-1 and done, there was going to be scrutiny on you anyway. But when you've been saying all year, judge me on the postseason, and in the postseason, you have had two games where you shot above 50%. You have had two games where you played well, game two against Indiana, game one against Milwaukee, and you are ending your run with the Celtics on right now a 19 of 62 stretch.
Yikes.
And 4 of 20 from three. And your answer is, I should have shot more? Well, there's going to be even extra scrutiny, particularly because how did Kyrie get to Boston? He demanded out of Cleveland because this is what he wanted.
Yep.
And as the parable goes, be careful what you wish for. It's at this moment appears to have been a little too much for Kyrie.
This was what the issue was all regular season long, that it was this fractured team that couldn't all get on the same page. And the fact that he said, I'm not shooting well, I should have shot more. What is the rest of the team? How are they supposed to react to that? Well, how about trying to get us involved a little bit? And the Bucks, CC, seemed to just take full advantage. They had a game plan. They went out and executed, led by Giannis.
Well, there's two conversations. One is, this is the Celtics team that we saw during the regular season. We shouldn't have expected for them. They don't have no championship pedigree. Kyrie does have the championship, but that don't make a team have a championship pedigree. Well, we were worried about two teams coming into as far as, will they be able to hit? Jenna wanted to start a lawnmower. I prefer an electric start button. But Kent, will they be able to do it? And that was the Celtics and the Warriors. We have far more confidence in the Warriors, and we've seen that.
Because also,
they're champs, and they could turn it on from a defensive standpoint, and that could alter game. What were the Celtics going to be going to? Because we knew that offensively, they're always going to be challenged. Kyrie Irving would be able to be the answer to all those questions. He hadn't been great, and he hadn't made the other players great, hadn't made Tatum great, hadn't made Jaylen Brown great. So this has been a lost opportunity. And Danny Ainge, I know he had some health problems and everything. Hey, man, don't hold on to all them picks, man. Life is precious, bro. Like, I thought you came there to win a championship. Now you're holding all these picks. Kyrie's leaving out the door with no compensation.
And it's Tatum, Brown, and Gordon Hayward moving forward. You're not getting Anthony Davis. Kyrie's leaving for nothing. And this long-term rebuild where you fleeced the Nets, depending on how free agency ends up, the Nets might be in better position going into next season than the Celtics are. But this wasn't just about Kyrie last night. This was a game that Boston, the most important game of their season, and they had plenty of chances. They were up 11 in the first half. It's a tie game in the third quarter when Giannis and Middleton have four fouls and have to go to the bench. And with the two best players on the Bucks on the bench, you get outscored 17-7. So now you go into the
fourth. But you warned them.
Right, you absolutely. You
warned
them.
You said, listen, this Bucks team, they're going to go on a run. Now, you don't expect the two best players to be on the bench to go on the run, but that's exactly what happened.
That's what happened, and now all of a sudden it's worst-case scenario because when you should have taken advantage of the minutes without Giannis, you didn't. You actually dug a big hole for yourself, and now you have a fully rested Giannis coming in for the fourth quarter, and he just annihilated them. But the Celtics, aren't you a great defensive team? Second half of games 2, 3, and 4, you allowed 64, 68, 66 points. Aren't you supposed to be deep? Your bench, Gordon Hayward, 4 of 18 in the final three games of the series, in 30 minutes per game. Terry Rozier, 3 of 18. Those two guys, 7 of 36 in the final three
Marcus
games of the
Morris
series.
So Marcus Morris actually addressed that after the game and said it's hard for us to play defense when we're not hitting our shots. We can't get back in time. And that was just the only way he was able to answer that.
So I would buy that if I hadn't watched the game as closely as I did. They weren't trying. They knew. Vince Goodwill said something really smart, I thought, last week about this. There's a time in a series where one team realizes we're not as good as the other team, and they lose their will. And the crowd lost its will.
Yes.
It was the loudest they were all night was when they were booing them off the court, and the players stopped rotating on defense. They had no defensive intensity, and Kyrie couldn't forget hit a three. He couldn't hit a layup to save his life.
And it went back to the lack of, I'm not committed to you. He's not committed to him. And that's what we went through during the regular season. And this is just a snapshot of exactly what we saw for the 82 games. And typically, that's what plays out in the playoffs, what kind of team you were during the regular season.
And then you saw at the end of the game, there was that shot of Kyrie walking to the locker room, head down, before everyone else sort of walked behind him. And you kind of just knew that they lost all of it.
All year long, they were an inconsistent, moody, poor shooting team. And they're going to lose in the playoffs because they're an inconsistent, moody, poor shooting team. They are what we thought they were.
All right, take a break. Coming up, talk some Cowboys. Can Dak
Dave
lead?
Thomas got Dennis Green.
Yeah.
Dallas to the Super on Saturday. Undefeated champ Swift Jared Hurd puts his titles on the line as he takes on top contender Julian J. Rock Williams. That's 8 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Back here, first things first, time for Say What. Last night, Marcus Smart played his first game in a month, and he was a little bit rusty. Smart went just 1 for 7. Giannis was asked about Smart's night after the game. Say what?
Marcus Smart returned to the game tonight. So did he make any impact on the game tonight?
I'm so glad he's not from the U.S. His reactions are just totally natural. They're not all, they're not the right company way and everything.
That is funny.
And he's not a mean guy.
No.
So he clearly, that wasn't shade. I think he was looking like, well, let me see if there's anything I can say. He sees 1 of 7.
No, this is like, because normally we have LeBron, photographic memory of all the plays and everything. LeBron would have had every shot that he missed. This was great. Oh.
Really good. And natural, which made it funny.
Tough night for Marcus Smart coming back.
Time for stories to start your morning. James Harden dropping 38 points last night in a Game 4 win over the Warriors. This series now tied at 2 games apiece. Nick, how impressive was Harden last night?
Man, Harden had a switch flipped in this series the moment he got his eyes raked. Prior to getting his eyes raked, he's shooting under 30%. He's playing really inefficiently. Since then, he's above his season averages in field goal percentage, three-point percentage, right at his season average in points per game. He was great last night, and he was the biggest reason why they built that 17-point lead that they then almost squandered at the end.
Yeah, he was the best player on the court for 3.5 quarters. But late in the game, that mid-range jumper right there, not settling for the three-point shot, which he wasn't good at late, and getting those, man, they needed every bucket that they could get. His overall ball handling, like in the lane, you can just see how well, man, he has adapted his game for this opportunity. Typically, didn't have the conditioning to be able to hold the team on his back. Now we see James Harden at his absolute best, and I believe last night was his best playoff game.
All right, moving on. Bucks, Celtics. Giannis had 39 points in a Game 4 win over the Celtics. Bucks take a 3-1 commanding series lead heading back to Milwaukee. See, how good was Giannis in this?
Oh, he was special. And that was the distraction of getting that fourth foul. It didn't like, how do you have four fouls? Like, man, ticky-tack one here, got two in a hurry, back-to-back, and then next thing you know, he's got to be able to go to the bench. But in that fourth, where this game could have gone in, the Celtics could have made a charge back. Giannis showed why he's one of the best players, why he had an MVP-type season. He took over, and I think that you're talking about Vince in that moment. Giannis was the one that drove the stake through their heart there late.
Absolutely. Giannis made it very clear to the Celtics, your team is not as good as ours. Your best player is not nearly as good as ours. And the Celtics, I don't want to say they quit, but their effort waned at the end. Giannis becomes, you'll love this one, see, just the third player in playoff history to have at least 35 and 15 in less than 35 minutes. The other two, Shaquille O'Neal, Hakeem Olajuwon. That level of dominance in those few minutes, you never see it. He was so good last
night. Oh, so one of three, right?
He's one of three to do that in NBA history.
All right, I'm trying to add that.
There you go, no problem. Yeah.
Moving on.
First time ever done it.
One of one is how I would say that.
Reports are Ty Lue and the Lakers are working on an agreement to make him the team's next head coach. It seems to be a pretty solid report considering Ty Lue celebrated his birthday with, as we saw earlier, a Lakers-themed cake. Nick, is this all but a done deal?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be announced yesterday. I said that yesterday, that by the time we're on the air today, I thought this would already be announced. It looks like they are still working out some language. Maybe Ty Lue trying to squeeze him for a few extra dollars. I don't think Ty is going to come cheaply. But, yes, it is. Everything's done except for the pen to paper. He's going to be the next head coach of the Lakers. It shouldn't have taken this long, but I guess it's going to take just a little bit longer.
Great birthday celebration. Little cake, Jenna. Mm-hmm. I mean, signing with the Lakers, getting that new money, Ty Lue celebrating. Now he's with his guy, LeBron James. Don't worry, though, Ty. You got help coming along the way. Free agency, get Ty signed, then free agency. I was hoping for a basketball operations guy, but Ty Lue is one of the key pieces to the Lakers getting back to the playoffs. Good signing by them. Was he their first choice, Nick?
It doesn't appear he was their first choice. It looks like Monty Williams turned him down to go with the Suns, which should be maybe a stark reality.
I told you
reality.
Monty was smart. Man, I told you.
Should be a stark reality for the Buss family. But I think they got the right guy, even if he wasn't the first choice. Similar to the Frank Reich situation in Indy.
Okay.
Finally, big offseason for the Cowboys. Sure, they're trying to improve on the 10 wins they had last season, but also sure, they got a lot of people to pay this offseason, and at the top of that list seems to be quarterback Dak Prescott. Jerry Jones reiterated the team's future commitment to Dak.
We're sold on Dak, and we do want to have him for the long term. We think he's worthy of investing in for the long term. He's going into his fourth year now in the NFL. We see real upside in Dak. You don't have it all yet.
You're going into year four. You don't have it all yet. We're talking about potential and upside. Mm-hmm. You wonder how much upside Dak Prescott has and if, like Jerry Jones, he should be the main guy you're talking about paying this offseason.
Well, Jenna, this is the hard thing now because we are in the golden age of an NBA of shooters and the golden age of quarterbacks in the NFL. Which ownership and which coaching staff is going to have enough patience to realize that you're going to get a lot of kids that aren't going to come out and have the impact that Baker Mayfield. And they can still be franchise quarterbacks and develop, especially between year three and year five. I always say there is no greater year of development than between year one and year two. But as a quarterback, there's so many aspects to the game that we have begun to appreciate that these young quarterbacks, they're not going to get until they have seasons under the belt, until they have some playoff losses under their belt, until they go into cold weather environment, noisy environments, and able to do that year after year after year. But we have some guys that are such instant success in throwing the football that we think everyone should be like that. Jared Goff, he gets Sean McVay. His career is off and running. But this is a process. Dallas has analyzed Dak for the first 3 years and realized for us to get another quarterback, We might get that process wrong. We have to go back into the draft because you know you can't get one in free agency, can't get one for cheap. We have to go back into the draft and we're going to draft one in the first round. Well, we can't do that. That's a top pick. Or in the second round? Or do I try to do the Dak Prescott again and develop another quarterback? So I'm with Jerry. They do have their quarterback of the future, but it should come with a certain price. And I do believe, and we have to just still have a great deal of patience, even though we're in this great era of throwing quarterbacks. It takes time to be able to get it right. And Dak, now he's not going to be as good as he's going to be in 3 or 4 years. And I know it's hard for fans to be able to look at it that way because we have so many guys that can throw the ball and throw it well, especially in the NFC, Nick.
And I'm going to approach this from a slightly different angle than I have when we've had this discussion before because it's pretty much I'm on the record that I wouldn't pay Dak yet. I would wait to see him do it another year. I would hold the franchise tag over his head. But the Cowboys are clearly not going to listen to me.
Yeah, can't fight City Hall.
Right. They're going to pay Dak. So here is, if you're a Cowboys fan, the argument for why this is a good decision. It's not just what Chris said, which is if you don't pay Dak, you got to go find somebody. And if I'm not mistaken, the last premium pick the Cowboys spent on a quarterback was Troy Aikman. I can't think of one in the last 30 years that we would consider a premium pick because they had Drew Bledsoe there, they had Quincy Carter, they had Tony Romo.
They took was Steve undrafted. Walsh in the supplemental draft and ultimately ended up trading him.
Right, the same year as Troy Aikman, yes. Right? So we're talking over 30 years ago is the last time they used a premium pick or picks on a quarterback, right? So when we were talking about these NBA playoff series, you said something interesting. You said, let's not overreact to game one or overreact to game two. If you flipped the order, what would the reaction be? What would the feeling be? Mm-hmm. If we had these same 3 years from Dak Prescott, but year two was year one, last year was year two, and that extraordinary year one was the one we just saw.
Well, of course.
The 13-3 season.
Yeah, then it would be a different
Then it would be a no-brainer. Narrative.
As Nick would say, it would make sense.
It would make sense. It would be a no-brainer. The point that I'm making is, yes, it'd be a different arc, but all those games were played. All that he has that we have seen him
but
do
it. CeCe says it all the time. No one had games on. No one had games to really look at. Defenses weren't fully prepared for
which
him.
Is why I think this would be an apocalyptically bad decision if what we didn't have in the most recent, when people had the most film, were those last eight games. Those last eight games where he looked the most like his rookie year he had looked, where he did win a playoff game, where after not being able to throw for 230 yards at any point during the year, he was regularly around 270, where we saw him with Amari Cooper. Again, do I think Dak's going to be above that Matt Ryan line, that make-believe line that I say is the threshold to pay a quarterback? I'm skeptical of it. Do I think because there are so the older quarterbacks aren't retiring and the younger quarterbacks are getting good faster, it's hard to be a top 10 quarterback, top 12 quarterback. It's hard to be a top half of the league quarterback. I think all those things are true. But the Cowboys, because they don't trust, I think, their ability to restart the process, and they think they can win right now, they're going to buy into Dak because you're not, much like you're not going to have your coach go in with a lame duck year, they don't want to have their quarterback go in with a lame duck year, and they're just going to bet that they're going to be right on him. It's just a big bet and a big gamble for them.
All right, we'll have to wait and see what they decide to do. Let's move back to the NBA now. The Golden State Warriors, they're on their quest to winning their fourth title in 5 years. They have seemingly hit a roadblock in the Houston Rockets, but not to worry. I mean, these are still the Warriors, right? At least for now. But with Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson being free agents this summer, reports are the Warriors are bracing for possible seismic change. Nick, what's your reaction to this report?
I mean, my reaction is Kevin Durant is leaving. The folks that argue with me on the internet or on the street, why do you say KD's coming to New York? We're not making it up. All the NBA media didn't get together before the year and was like, hey, let's all get on the same page.
So Kevin doesn't have to put it on the bottom of the screen breaking news?
Right. Kevin Durant's leaving. I know that. C knows that. You know that. The Warriors know that. The seismic shift, the change would be if they lose more than Kevin Durant. Which is why there was another report yesterday about the Warriors prioritizing Klay in free agency, not making Klay wait on Kevin Durant's decision to get an offer from Golden State. The Warriors would be, in my eyes, even though Klay has been bad this series, I understand that, they would be insane if they give Klay any reason to test the waters. The first day they can, they need to offer Klay the full 5-year max that they can offer him and make it clear, we love you, we need you, we want you. And that's with or without Kevin Durant. Because what a seismic change would be to me, Jenna, would be Kevin Durant leaves and Klay goes south to Los Angeles. And now it's like, wait, are we spending this money on Boogie? Are we in the Tobias Harris market? Like, is it Steph and Draymond? So I don't think it will be a seismic change as long as they handle their business properly on not letting Klay Thompson go flirt with other teams.
Now, Nick, if they offer Klay the max on the first day and KD is doing his search, how does that change? Now, can KD, does he have to take less money?
No, because they have bird rights on both. Okay, so they for them, it's not a situation like when you're trying to get a free agent and re-sign your own guy.
It's more of a respect thing.
It's more of a respect thing. And the only reason they wouldn't offer Klay the full max is if they are, first of all, if they're being cheap, they're about to be printing money in their new arena. But if they are holding out hope that KD stays, and if they are saying, if KD stays, do we need Klay Thompson at $40 million a year? Because Klay Thompson at $40 million a year, if KD's there, that luxury tax, now we're talking basically $100 million a year. Mm-hmm. And so, but that would be, to me, Joe Lacob and Bob Myers have run this team beautifully. I might not like how they got Kevin Durant, but they have done their business really well. It would be so foolish for them to gamble losing Klay when I think they're at less than 5% to keep Kevin Durant anyway, just in the hopes of maybe saving some money if you get lucky and KD stays.
Right. So what would be the reason for Klay wanting to leave? If he knows that Kevin Durant is probably leaving, that's one less star. You could still be one of the two biggest guys on the team that has now probably won four titles.
I think the only way that Klay would leave was out of disrespect if they offered him a contract that wasn't the max. So what I believe, because I do believe that this report, there's some truth to it. I believe that the seismic change will be Kevin Durant won't be there. That's the reality. It's not a rumor now. It's not all will he go. Like, he's going to actually be gone. So the way that we have seen basketball the last 3 years, that's getting ready to change in the NBA, not only for the Golden State Warriors. But I do believe that going through this stretch where they had this team, they will look at it and be like, wow, we need to have some players on the bench. We need to spend this money a little more wisely. Then we'd have all these starters making all this money. Going forward, yeah, I want to keep Steph. I want to keep Klay. I like to keep Draymond. But we need to try to fortify our bench because that Western Conference is not getting any easier. And if KD stays in the West, Kawhi comes to the West, like there's no relief in sight. So I think that might be the difference in how they do business.
And I think the concern the Warriors might have, the reason that this would come out is, I don't think anyone expects, while seemingly the entire NBA world, including his teammates, expects KD to pick the Knicks. I don't think, and I'm not hearing, that anyone expects KD to do it on the first day. So if KD drags it out, like LeBron did a few years ago when he made the decision to go back to Cleveland, I guess 5 years ago now. That wasn't on the first day, it wasn't on the second day, it wasn't on the third day. KD, when he picked the Warriors, he did it on the 4th of July. He did it a couple days into free agency. I don't think they expect KD to do what Paul George did or what LeBron did this past year and announce it the day of, essentially. I think they expect it to take some time. And if that's taken some time and you are not offering Klay until you have an answer for Kevin Durant, then you could lose him. And then it would, because that would be disrespectful. That would be to Klay, a guy who is at the very least a part of three championship teams, maybe going to be a part of four championship teams, that we think you are expendable. And you let someone go, you know, you give someone a hall pass, go flirt for a little bit. Sometimes they don't come back. And so that's something that I believe the Warriors would be foolish if they do. Offer them the 5 years, $200 million, and be happy about it.
You and I, Nick, in the hall pass, not Jenna.
No, I don't know. No, I don't have one of those either. I don't think you exactly know what the hall pass is.
No, I'm talking about when we were in school, not now.
Okay,
no,
yeah,
no,
in
I don't
school.
Need no hall
Absolutely.
Pass. No,
exactly.
No, no.
The hall pass lets you get out of jail free.
Let's just talk about
hall
Kyrie
pass.
Irving.
You
hey,
go
guys.
Go to the hall, use the bathroom.
Play that music
in school.
If you would, please. Coming up.
Oh, you get a pass and then you get to go.
Ah, that's none of what it means. Has Kyrie Irving played his last home game in Boston? That's ahead.
He has hall pass.
On First Things First.
Oh, you can't go out. Back here, First Things First, Yahoo senior writer Vincent Goodwill joins us now.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
V Money. Everyone, Big John, my camera guy, he wants a nickname. He's been here 2 days, want a nickname. So, V Money, Big John, let's do this.
All right, let's do it.
I called him V Money, and you guys said never call him that again.
I said never call him that again. You were totally correct.
But I put something on it, though.
It sounds a little different coming out of his mouth than yours, Jenna. I got to be honest.
Well, at least you're honest. Sixers, Raptors, they'll play
Big
game
John,
five
what up, baby?
Tonight. This series tied at 2 games apiece. Toronto owned game 4 thanks to Kawhi Leonard and his 39 points. Joel Embiid, who was sick before the game, only had 11 points for Philly. Head coach Brett Brown said he still didn't have an update on Embiid's status ahead of game 5. Vinny, what do you expect tonight?
I expect – wait. Do we know if Joel Embiid is playing? Do we know if he's sick?
We don't know
if he has the runs, the diarrhea, something like that?
Typically has an update like 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, okay. So we haven't heard it quite yet. Yeah. Okay.
Typically, he texts the coach in the morning so he can scare the shit out of the coach. Yeah.
Right. There you go.
That's what he did.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what just happened.
Let's assume he's playing. Let's assume Joel Embiid's playing.
Okay. If we assume he's playing, but how well does he play? Because after game 2, you could say, all right, maybe Joel Embiid is the best player in this series. And then after game 4, you were like, wait a minute. Kawhi Leonard is the best player in this series. We still don't know who the best team is in this series, but we know that Kawhi Leonard is the best performer here. Now, for me, I think Kawhi Leonard's going to play his best game. And if you're on the road and you're Philadelphia, you can't depend on your role players tonight. This has to be a Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid game. And because it's going to be a Jimmy Butler game, it means that there's not going to be a big Ben Simmons factor because he's not a factor when he doesn't have the ball. To me, that is the biggest dichotomy of all of this for Philadelphia, is that to maximize your best performer, which has been Butler, you have to minimize your most important player, which is Simmons, which leaves Embiid as a total wild card, and you don't know how he's going to perform from night to night.
Is Ben Simmons really the most important player? Because he hasn't really been, especially you saw Jimmy Butler is now taking command. This offense is now seemingly going through Jimmy Butler. Ben Simmons has been a non-factor.
Ben Simmons being a non-factor is one of the reasons that the Sixers have not been able to, in my mind, fully take advantage of a Raptors team that right now is not doing a ton great, except for employing Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. The bench has not been great. Pascal Siakam in game 4 was not very good himself. They clearly miss OG. Fred VanVleet is MIA totally. So Philly, if they had been playing, because Jimmy Butler's playing better than I think would have been fair to anticipate, given how up and down he was all season, mm-hmm. Jimmy Butler's been consistent. What Philly is missing is the process and the Prince playing up to their abilities, right?
Absolutely. It's
Joel Embiid mm-hmm. consistently producing at the level we know he can, and Ben Simmons producing at all to the level that we know he can. So I've been very complimentary of Ben Simmons' defense. And I had a very smart NBA person reach out to me yesterday and say, Nick, you are getting the Ben Simmons defense in this series totally wrong. He is not using his length, and he is not using his strength to his advantage when he's guarding Kawhi. Yes, Kawhi might be shooting a lower percentage against Simmons than he is against other people, but it's because he's flamethrowing against everyone else. The point that was made to me is that Simmons is not steering Kawhi anywhere, that Kawhi is getting exactly to his spots, a la Bernard King, like you said yesterday, as far as who he reminds you of. So to answer your question, long-winded, I apologize, but Ben Simmons, if he plays great, they'll win. Like, if Ben Simmons has a great game, assuming Joel Embiid is healthy-ish, they will win. But this is the worst playoff series thus far of his career, in a spot where Toronto actually, to me, looks a little wounded and looks a little Toronto in the postseason-ish.
I think what you said is the most important thing. And that's all we can establish in this series. We can be like, oh, Joel Embiid, he's not dependable. His health, is he in shape, all that. Ben Simmons, oh, he can't shoot. The number one thing in this series is Kawhi Leonard is the best player. So if you say what's going to happen in game number 5, that's the only thing that we can predict. All right? You can talk about all these other things. Kawhi Leonard has been outstanding. But to your point, as good as Kawhi has been, we still don't know who's the best team because we don't know who's going to show up for the Raptors. Now, I do believe that this can be a franchise-changing game. There's a rumor out there that the choice right now for Kawhi would be Toronto and the Clippers. If Kawhi was able to get game number 5 in Jurassic Park and somehow they get to the finals, Kawhi could stay there. So for me, I'm not, forget all these other things. Van Fleet, is he going to come off the bench and do something? Well, no, not predictable. So for me, I believe Kawhi is going to send another message in this game. He didn't like the way he finished off and missed those two free throws, couldn't get the 40-point game. So that's what I'll be looking for in game number five, Jenna.
But Vinny, now you're banking on Kawhi going out and doing this again and again. If there's one thing that we've known about the Raptors is that they always have the deepest bench. That's the one thing that it's been a constant last year, this year. They've all but disappeared. Now you got a bank on Kawhi giving you 39, 40, 41 points a night?
Well, not that production, not the number. But to me, look, we can say all we want to say about the bench and the role players. Sometimes stars got to be stars. This is a star league. This is the league where the best players have the ball in their hands the most time, and they can have a disproportionate effect on the game compared to anybody else, whether that's Kawhi or Jimmy Butler or Embiid or Simmons, whatever it is. Like, you have to call those guys and put the responsibility onto them. And if that's Embiid, who went from basically calling himself the he called himself the process, as in the entire Philadelphia process, and cupping his hands to the ears of the Philadelphia fans and egging right on and all sort of type of stuff, right? Okay, if you're going to do that, be the guy. No matter whether you're sick, you're ill, whatever the case may be the guy. And Ben Simmons fancies himself as someone who is in that same category. He thinks that he's a top 10 player in the game, regardless of his deficiencies. If that's the case, be the guy.
And there's an element of this to where Philly has to look back on game four and say, okay, with a minute left, it's a one-point game. In that, up to that point, Joel Embiid had made two shots. Ben Simmons had made two shots. Kawhi Leonard was playing out of his mind. And it was a one-point game with a minute left. That even they could have won game four with their two best young pieces, if not young players, because Butler's there, were playing terribly. Kawhi was playing great, and they still were right there until the very end. Mm-hmm. They know their complementary pieces, shockingly, are outplaying the Raptors' complementary pieces. I wonder if that travels north of the border tonight.
All right. Leave it there. Take a break. Vinny, stick around. Coming up, how nervous should the Warriors be after dropping game four? Talk about that next on First Things First. Back here with Vinny Goodwill. Rockets and Warriors. Houston
also
trying
known in Detroit as V-Money.
Money to even the series at two games apiece. End of the third. James Harden nailing the step back three. He had 38, less than 10 seconds left. Warriors down five. Steph misses from long but gets it back. Drills it. Warriors down two, less than 10 seconds left. Now trailing by three, Kevin Durant gets a chance, can't hit the shot. Steph gets a chance, can't hit the shot. No more chances, no more shots, boys. Rockets win it, 112-108. The series tied, heading back to Oracle. Here's James Harden after the win.
We know, you know, what's at stake. We know who we're playing against. We're not going to let up. Like, we're going to keep coming at you until the end of the game.
There's no panic. I know we say that a lot, but it's really just we're together and we understand what the task at hand is. And, you know, very similar to last series where whatever the expectations were going in, you kind of just roll with the punches and just get the job done any way that you can. So Wednesday is going to be fun. Got a great opportunity to get control of the series, do it at home, and then take it from there.
I know nobody's asking, but that was like 5 degrees too laid back for me. That was like, I know you don't want to panic, but maybe like a little more effort or
Steph's
maybe sense of urgency, just a tad bit. The series is now tied.
I would just say to that real quick, Steph is the calming force within the team.
The quintessential calming force, and I do get that. All right, Vinny, let's talk about this. How did the Rockets do it? How'd they win last night, even up this series?
Well, I think it was simple. And I said it before the other night. I said, look, we haven't had the James Harden explosion game. You got it. You got it last night. Now, the good news is that's out of the way for Golden State. I don't think he's going to have another game where he's that hot from three. And it sort of carries through the momentum of the rest of some of the mistakes that the Rockets made that could have lost in the game. The good news for Golden State is Stephen Curry has not had that type of game. I don't think he played well. He had 30 last night, but I don't think he played particularly well. He lucked into some opportunistic buckets early, but it didn't wind up finding him into a rhythm, and he's the guy that is the barometer for everything Golden State does. When they look frenetic, when they look casual with the ball, it's because Stephen Curry is casual with the ball, and Houston is beating them up. They're clutching, they're grabbing, they're establishing a style of play that the refs are letting go, and they're looking for the refs to bail them out, and that's not the case right now. So Golden State has to get out of their own heads and stop waiting for the officials to say, you know, Stephen's looking around saying, hey, Chris is grabbing me. So what? Like, this is what happens during the playoffs, and I think this is what you expect. 2-2, both teams held serve. I don't think there's a need to panic either way. Like, Stephen, they've won 3 out of the last 4 championships. You think Stephen Curry's going to panic right now because it's 2-2?
After 4 games, one of the most amazing stats that I saw was I think that the Warriors have scored 1 more point than the Rockets.
Yep.
Like, it has gone back and forth, but I just think that the message that the Rockets have sent, not only this game, not only in this series, but the last 2 seasons, like, the Rockets were built for this. Last year, Chris Paul gets hurt. They're up 3-2. So they think, in adding, they came out of the regular season thinking they were better than they were last year, and they continue to make adjustments. They went to the smaller lineup. They've shortened their bench. Nene, oh, yeah, you can help us about 3 minutes worth. Yeah. Gerald Green, oh, you can help us about 2 minutes worth. Like, I'm going to depend on our frontline players. Austin Rivers is going to give us some type of lift. He gave us the lift that Shumpert gave us, 10 in game 3. Austin Rivers gets that. So, to me, I believe that the Rockets, this is the best opportunity for them to be able to upset the Warriors, because the Warriors aren't as good. And in the back of their mind, as good as KD has been, they know KD's going to leave. They never had that before. So how does it play out on the game? I can't equate it to some type of formula, but we saw them sputter during the regular season. We did see them go to the gas, cooking in the playoffs. But that Clippers series, they lost 2 games. At home, why would we be shocked that the Rockets wouldn't win at least 2 games? That's why I believe this team is best suited to pull off the upset and knock off the world champ.
And the other element of this team, since Boogie went down, the Warriors have 5 guys they trust, and they're playing those 5 guys super heavy minutes, or at least they were, until last night, where Iggy only plays just under 30. And so now, all of a sudden, instead of Iggy, because he has been so sensational this postseason, and my gosh, he has such a unique career arc, and I have so much respect for who he is as a player and as a person. But those, we only have a day of rest. I just played 40-plus minutes. I am working my tail off on both ends. Now he doesn't have as much punch. Now you do have to give Alphonso McKinney 11 minutes. You don't want to give Alphonso McKinney 11 minutes in this series. You're playing Sean Livingston, who looks done, if we're being honest. You're giving him more minutes. And what we know in this series, this postseason, the Warriors, when they've got that Hamptons 5 out there, are exceptional. And when any one unit of that 5 is off, they're not as good. So now you look at the game 5. I don't know if you saw it. I'm guessing you did. Tail end of that game, Iggy got hurt.
Yes.
On a free throw box out, Chris Paul clipped his leg. The reports were late night was that Iggy had a heavy limp. Now I expect him to play, but no more extra days of rest. You are flying today. You are playing tomorrow. They might have flown overnight. I'm not certain, but they are playing tomorrow. And so if they can't play all of their starters 35-plus minutes to 40-plus minutes, how does that work? How does the fact that KD, 45 minutes, then 43 minutes in the last 2 games, how does that wear on him? Because Harden, he played just under 40. He's also more used to this workload than the Warriors are. He's been doing it year after year. There are a lot of elements where the Rockets got to feel like, hey, we really kicked their butts for 43 minutes last night. They almost gave it away at the end. We are even through 4 games, and yeah, maybe Steph will catch on fire, but at some point KD, you would think, is going to cool off to a degree. And so the Rockets have to feel like, to your point, C, they're not better than us. We are as good as Golden State.
But also, in addition to Iggy maybe being hurt and these guys playing so much and they're tired and they're fatigued, for whatever reason, this team hasn't totally clicked in the postseason yet. You haven't had a stretch of like 3 great games. No. Like, well, those are the Warriors. So it's almost a blessing in disguise for the Rockets. Maybe they didn't want him in the second round. They got him in the second round before this team flipped that proverbial switch we talk about.
I would say that not for that reason. I would say because the Rockets don't go deep, you want to play Golden State a little bit earlier before Harden gets tired, because Harden seems to wear down as the postseason goes along.
Chris Paul.
I think the mental fatigue is catching Golden State now more than anything physical, more than the minutes. Yeah. I think there is some concern about Iguodala, and that Chris Paul play did not look like a natural basketball play. Let me just say that.
You know, it was a little dirty by Chris Paul.
Just, I mean, not that he has a history of doing anything.
Last night's game.
Not that he has a history of doing anything right. like that. But yeah. So, but I think the mental fatigue of four straight years, five straight years with this group, 100 games a year. At some point, the bill is going to be due on that, and I think it's just coming a little bit sooner than even they expected.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.